Shalom, everyone. So now we begin the evening reading for the Feast of Tabernacles, and each evening reading, we focus on readings in Tho related to the seal of the day, and the seal for today is the seal, or Awakening the Mystical Paths. So I'm going to be reading a whole bunch of different essays from the essay section of Tho relating to the Mystical Paths, and we're going to start here. Meditation and prayer. Meditation is a state when God talks to a person. Prayer is when a person talks to God. That is why in meditation one feels oneness with God or being. Without being humble, this might create a superiority feeling in the person who meditates. This is the reason why selfless service is recommended for the disciples. To bring a balance between a great feeling of being one with God and the humbleness of being selfless, his servant. Prayer also does the same thing. In order for a person to kneel down and pray to God, he or she should humble the self to do so. Therefore, meditation and prayer go hand in hand. They bring a balance to a person. Meditation makes a person to be with God. Prayer makes him humble. Prayer, in fact, is a spiritual service, not being self-centered, to the self. And actually that was from supplements. And now we'll move to essays 2. Middle path balance. A middle path balance is the best way, not reactionary solutions which are called thesis and antithesis. In the past history, the human has always handled the situation of this world in a reactionary way. He always reacts to what happened to him after the cause of dissatisfaction becomes unbearable. This process is so common in human life that he has come to believe in the theory of thesis and antithesis. According to this theory, there is an antithesis for everything in this universe. So there is a struggle going on between the thesis and its antithesis. Eventually, one of them will dominate, and the new antithesis will be created for this new thesis, so it will go on and on. The true reason for creation of an antithesis, however, is disequilibrium of the thesis. That is, whenever the equilibrium between the elements of a complex system become disturbed, it is then that it to bring the situation back to equilibrium, or to create a new thesis, equilibrium. That is, a controller in the system is necessary to maintain the equilibrium between all the elements of the system. However, so far the human has used such controlling elements only in his machines, such as thermostats, but not in his day-to-day life or in society in general. Only by creating a system with a sensitive controller at the top who does not ignore any act which will lead to an imbalance in the system and who has enough incentive to allow all the elements of a system of the system to grow together can humans establish a society of harmony and peace. That is why the advent of true leaders and a very sensitive system is necessary to prevent the misconduct of the elements of the society and classes within it. Only these true selfless leaders can maintain an equilibrium between workers, intellectuals, and businessmen, reap the kingdom of heaven on earth. They will not let any of these classes exploit others, but will allow all four classes to grow hand in hand. However, if any of these elements out of hand, they should be guided back to their places. If their growth seemed necessary for the progress of society, they will be allowed to do so, but they will be guided so that others do not become exploited with any of these elements. The theory of equilibrium or balance is not only applicable to the social system, but is true in all affairs of life. Indeed, it can be said to be what the great masters called the middle path. So now we'll move to yoga postures, asanas, in essays 3. Yoga postures, asanas. As the muscles become stronger by exercise, the ethereal body becomes purified and stronger by yoga postures, asanas. That is why we can call asanas inner size, in contrast to exercise, which affects the external. These postures affect the glands, which control the energy centers in the body, chakras, and bring a balance between the physical body, spirit, ethereal body, and soul, self. It is also recommended to practice asanas, especially in the beginning of the spiritual journey, and so strengthen the spirit and become familiar with the body and how it functions. However, a person should not become obsessed with this kind of practice and use it only for physical fitness. Unless such a person is a professional teacher of asanas, the spiritual effect of this practice should be kept in mind more than the physical. Like any practice or habit, it should not become a person's master. Eventually, a person will become so familiar with the body that he realizes many other things affect it. By avoiding ones which bring negative forces and accumulating more positive forces, the need of doing asanas can be eliminated or brought to a minimum and only used as an occasional tool to tune the body, spirit, and mind together. It is not only practices that make a man free, but knowledge of the laws of the Lord and His grace. These practices make a person become more sensitive to understand His laws and become purer to feel His grace, so he might eventually find the way, eternal divine path, receive the Holy Ghost, and by trial of the Holy Ghost, His grace, reach the goal. Next we'll go to, also in Essays 3, Spiritual Chanting and Dancing, Kirtan. In most religions, especially the mystical side of them, we find spiritual music, chanting, and dancing. Even in the Old Testament in the Bible, the verse below shows that this tradition existed. That thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place with a psaltery and a tabret and a harp before them, and they shall prophesy. Samuel 10:5. The dervishes are well known for how they dance, go into a trance, and sometimes prophesy. Also, in the Buddhist and Hindu traditions, we can find spiritual dancing and chanting. In Sanskrit, this is called kirtan. Even in the beginning of Christianity, this tradition was practiced. But as it became intellectualized, this aspect was less emphasized and eventually forgotten. So we can see that this practice has been in all great religions of the world. The reason for this is because there are many spiritual benefits in kirtan. With chanting, special words, mantras, playing instruments, and dancing, all three aspects of human life, physical, mental, and spiritual, will be engaged in a rhythmic movement. So they all become in tune and a balance between them is achieved. This rhythmic movement also increases the coordinative ability of the person, because a greater coordination between the mind and body will be achieved when a person is practicing the kirtan. He should chant, dance, and play the instrument at the same time, so he has to improve his coordination. Also, spiritual chanting and dancing brings the mind into the present and now. That is the secret of controlling the mind. The mind that wanders into the past or worries about the future never can realize the self and joy of living. Be still and know that I am God. Psalm 46:10. So the kirtan helps the mind become still and know the Lord. Also, as we know, the whole manifested universe is nothing but vibration. When spiritual music is used with some mantras and ideation toward God and higher thoughts, this stimulates the higher chakras and brings the higher thoughts and energy to the person. For the vibrational reason, music stimulates the glands, and spiritual music helps in creating a balance between the glands, so therefore brings a healthier body and emotional response. Also, because it takes the consciousness to higher levels, it loosens the dry intellect. Although it is hard for intellectuals to give in, indeed it is very good for them, because they can forget themselves to be rational and lose themselves into the higher plane, which is devotional. Indeed, kirtan is the base to awaken devotional feelings in man. That is why those who practice this exercise receive a blissful feeling from it. They rise from being on a rational plane to a devotional one, where the joy and happiness cannot be realized by the state of man. It is indescribable. Kirtan also is an exercise and loosens up the muscles and joints in the body. Therefore, the body becomes prepared to sit in meditation poses much easier. After kirtan, a person is physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually more prepared to sit for meditation. Furthermore, when kirtan is done by a group, it brings a unified vibration to all involved. Even though each person might have come from different backgrounds with different vibrations, by doing kirtan together, they come into the same rhythm of vibration, feeling one and becoming one. So there is much merit in kirtan, but many people shy away from it because the ego dies fast, and many do not want their egos to die. As it can be seen in the verse which was quoted above from the Bible, only a few high spiritual people, quote, prophets, were following this practice. Also, few people in those religions who practice chanting and dancing are fully dedicated to kirtan. Therefore, we can conclude that although this kind of practice is recommended, not very many people truly appreciate it. That is because to let the ego go and create high devotion for God is very frightening for some, and also sometimes is not necessary in this degree. We need people in other levels of consciousness also. The least one can do is to be tolerant. And next we'll go to Essays 3, Tablet 3, The Three Gunas. The universe consists of three forces and the consciousness. In Sanskrit, these three forces are called tama, static, raja, mutative, and sattva, sentient. Tamaguna, guna means force, is that force which crudifies consciousnesses. Rajaguna is the active force or action. Sattvaguna is the force of logic or decision-making. The soul, unit consciousness, uses these forces to relate to and control the universe. However, we can never separate these forces with any clear-cut borders. There is a range between almost complete domination of tamaguna to almost complete domination of sattvaguna. This can be represented by the graph below. And there's a picture which you can see if you are following along. When tamaguna dominates, there is still some rajaguna and sattvaguna present, which is shown in the small area at the bottom of the picture. This is also true when sattvaguna dominates, right side of the graph. There is still some tamaguna and rajaguna present. Tamaguna is the force responsible for this manifested universe and also for the unawareness of the consciousness in the unaware part of the universe. As it is illustrated in the graph above, as the sattvic force becomes more dominant over the consciousness, tamaguna loses its power over the soul. That is why, through gaining power over the tamaguna, spiritual people feel freer and freer from the bondage of this external world and become closer and closer to the spiritual world, which is beyond the control of this crudifying force. The material world, manifested world, is made of consciousnesses crudified, bent, by the power of the tamaguna, gathering of the waters, Genesis 1:9. This was created in order to help these unit consciousnesses to progress toward higher consciousness and eventually pure consciousness. Also, this tamaguna is the force responsible for crudifying the consciousness of the human. That is why the human should overcome the tamaguna and avoid anything that empowers this force over his soul, or reach a state that it has no power over him. When this manifested world is not used properly, by becoming attached to its illusion, Maya, or a sentient environment is not created to direct the consciousness toward higher thoughts, by creating crudifying images or objects which bend man toward his lower nature, the consciousness becomes more and more self-centered and separated from the spiritual world where tamaguna has no power over it. These three gunas are represented symbolically in the Bible as the three famous angels, Michael, Gabriel, and Lucifer. As it is mentioned in Isaiah 14:12, Lucifer, which means the shining star, was made by God to be the king of the world, but he failed and was cast out. That is exactly what the tamaguna does when a soul is under its influence. The soul becomes so crude that it is drowned in the ocean of Maya, ignorance, and will not be able to understand the realities behind this universe. That is why we say that person is following the devil, Satan, evil, etc. In other words, he is under the influence of the tamaguna. Therefore, it is the tamaguna which bends us toward the excessive attraction to the external world. When tamaguna is present, rajaguna, action, mutative force, will be bent toward excessive materialistic possession, or we will be attached to the result of our actions, or we will create expectations. When tamaguna is present, sattvaguna will be bent toward the material world. Sattvaguna is that part of us which makes the decisions and commands the ego to do the decisions. When tamaguna dominates, decisions will be directed toward bondage, toward the material world, attachments, desires, greed, etc. However, when tamaguna has been overcome, decisions will be selfless toward the spiritual laws and for the welfare of the whole universe. This will make our actions, raja, also pure and free from bondage. So it is the tamaguna, devil, which should be overcome and controlled. Again we can see that the devil is the same as the tamaguna, which crudifies the consciousness. When tamaguna dominates the human soul, it is the devil, Satan. When the human soul dominates tamaguna, it becomes a shining star, Lucifer. Then this manifested world becomes a guiding light toward reaching the spiritual world. Hence we see that the foolishness of the external world is a shining star to guide us to God. Tamaguna is any force that bends the human soul toward the excessive attraction to the external world, and therefore creates unnecessary attachment, desires, expectations, greed, etc., toward the external world, or anything that looks good to do or follow, but after it is done or followed brings suffering and the feeling of emptiness and separation from God, universe. And I will also read the next section. Control of the lower self. As the tamaguna is the devil when the soul is under its influence, and becomes a shining star, Lucifer, when it is overcome, so is the lower nature. The lower nature in itself can be a hindrance in spiritual progress, or, if its selfish tendencies are overcome, can be used for physical, mental, and spiritual progress of self and others, others as the rest of the universe. For example, the desire to survive, which is related to the first chakra, can be an inspiration for material advancement. But if a person is ignorant of the unimportance of what we see as our only life and is desperately afraid of death, then it can be a hindrance in his path. Or sex, which is a powerful force in the human body, when controlled and used to channel its energy to the higher self, psychic centers, or used to create a healthy body for a new human being, it is a blessing. However, if it makes a man heedlessly seek its satisfaction uncontrollably and makes him do whatever is necessary to gain this satisfaction, then it is an obstacle in human progress. The use of the power of the third chakra is similar. When this center is controlled and used for gaining power in order to establish the kingdom of heaven, then it also becomes a guide for human progress. But using it for gaining positions and prestige for the sake of self-gratification makes it a devilish center. However, selflessness resides in these first three centers. Therefore, man should gain control over them first by raising his spiritual consciousness to the higher self, and then use the power of these centers for the progress of the self and others. Notice that you have to gain control over these lower centers, not destroy them. You do not kill a wild horse, but instead break him down in such a way that he is under your control. Then you will have a powerful horse to give you rides and pleasure. That is also true about the lower self. When you gain control over it, then you will have many powerful forces to use for the progress of yourself and others. I'll finish with this. I'm not sure if this is truly related, really, to the first seal, but it's a good essay. This is Ethereal Beings and Astral Projection. Astral projection is of two kinds: those which are messages from higher planes or God, and those which are created by the ego. In truth, astral projection is nothing but the creation of the individual mind or the universal mind. Those whom God wants to use to reveal a message, but are not in that level to realize the formless, nameless, and invisible, need another channel between the physical world and the formless, nameless, and invisible. That is why God creates a master or guidance for them in the astral plane, or any other kind that the person feels he has communication with. Then he can realize God through it, and also it helps people in this state to feel assured of the existence of higher and invisible worlds and truths. In truth, such a master does not exist. Of course, the consciousness in the image is a master, God. But like visions and higher dreams, all is created by the universal mind. If a person realizes that even these are all illusions and tries to realize the only true source, the highest source or God, he can even overcome this last illusion. However, this process helps those who are in this level of progress, and if they could eliminate their egos completely, God can reveal many truths to the person through that created channel. But that image eventually should be given up, because even that is an obstacle to complete freedom and perfect enlightenment that all is God, consciousness, and the three gunas. The other kind of astral projection is to travel in the ethereal body and create images in this plane with the mind, ego. In this kind of astral projection, the person learns how to go to this plane, but he is not advanced enough to be guided to higher truths. In this plane, the person can see what he imagines. So usually, with his bad thoughts, false ego, he creates scary scenes, and they seem so real to him that he rushes back to the body from fear of them. As it is said, the only reliable source is the formless, nameless, and invisible universal mind. Any other things are just illusions, and so obstacles in the path to complete freedom. Therefore, they have to be disregarded. True masters, avatars, come to this world in the flesh like regular people. Then later on, the signs that were prophesied about them will be manifested, and they themselves realize their missions. This has been true all throughout history. Examples are Buddha, Isa, Muhammad, Bob, etc., who all came as regular people and then realize their divinity later on in their lives. Even in the case of these great souls, although they are subjects of reverence, what they said and preached is important, not themselves. However, devotion to them works as a bridge to God. And that'll be the end of the reading for tonight, or for this session at least. Salam alaikum.